Christmas unicorn in a uniform made of gold, with a billy goat beard and a sorcerer's shield and a mistletoe.
Hi everyone, welcome to my podcast. I'm John Book, as you probably know, and this is episode 6 of my very own podcast. We have a normal show for you today. It is what I always do. I talk, I try and be funny, I tell what's going on, and then I share reviews and things like that. There's no tap dancing, no opera singers, no sudden guest appearances by former presidents. It is not an unusual show today, but that doesn't mean it's a bad show just because it's an average show, because my average is great. Anyway, welcome to the podcast. Wanted to share some updates from life here in Sheffield. It's been a couple weeks since you last heard from me. We've sort of all come out of sickness, but you might be able to tell from my voice that I'm a little bit raspy. It's my annual beginnings of chest infection, which I was praying that I wouldn't have this year, but no such luck yet. Yesterday, I had my quarterly personal retreat. Great part of my job is that 4 times a year, we get a personal day where we are encouraged to take a retreat, seek God, and just go out and get refreshed and dream and process and listen and all of the things that you do on a personal retreat. Different people on our staff have different styles. A lot of the guys go out to a retreat center overnight or maybe even 2 nights. Just the way our family functions, I feel, and with the age of our kids, I feel a little bit less liberty to go somewhere overnight. I've not ever done that. But usually what I do is I leave in the morning and I just drive somewhere out into the Peak District. Sheffield is located on the edge of Peak District National Park, which picture, you know, the rolling hills and the Princess Bride, that kind of thing. It was actually filmed here. Well, not in my house, but in the area. And I drive, I try and get a little bit lost. I wander, I try and find a place I've never been, maybe walk around a bit, hike a little, take a walk. And then I try and find a pub that I've never been to. And I'll order lunch, get my computer out, my Bible out, a few other things out, and just sit for a couple of hours and write and think and listen to God. And that is what I do. Then I come back and I'll usually spend the evening here in the house, have dinner with the family, and then in the evening go up to the office in our bedroom and spend some more time with God there while Ira does other stuff. Additional pub meal is gammon steak. It just occurred to me that some of you might not know what a pub is, or you might have a different picture of a pub. A country pub here is going to be like an old building, kind of picture where the hobbits meet Strider in the Lord of the Rings movie. Something that looks sort of like that, with multiple rooms and fireplaces, and you can order food and you can order drinks. It's not a bar. It's more of a sort of country restaurant. Some of them are in buildings that are hundreds of years old. I try and find a different one each time. Yesterday was the first time that I ended up in one that I'd been to before. I'd gone into one earlier, but it was like really, really expensive. It's like $25 a plate. And my traditional meal is gammon steak, which, if you don't know what gammon is, it's a cut of pork that's somewhere between a pork chop and ham. And it's delicious, usually served with egg and pineapple and chips, or French fries, as the Americans say. Anyway, that wasn't the core of my day. The core of my day was really to get some perspective and pray about the church plant. Because, as I've mentioned before, we feel that God has called us to lead the first church plant out of here. Doing that a little bit backwards, because we don't know where we're supposed to go. We have a lot of places that we'd be interested in going. But we really felt called to build a team first, a community of people that love, serve, bless each other, know how to minister together. And as we seek God together, let Him speak where we're supposed to go. We're doing that, and the process is slow going. We've needed to scout several cities, but just to be frank, we haven't had the money to be able to pay for those trips. So we haven't scouted a lot of places. We've only been scouted 2 places in the last year, both of them within an hour or two of Sheffield. And it just, sometimes it's felt frustrating, like it's going slower than it's supposed to. So yesterday I just spent time talking to God about it, basically compiling every dream and every word from other people, everything anyone's ever come up to us and prayed for us, and just wrote it all out. And it was encouraging to look at. One of the patterns definitely was that this was going to be a slow process and that God was definitely in it. I just am trying to figure out the next steps. And that's a bit complicated. Definitely pray for us in that because we want to know. And there's some people on the team who, because of the way their jobs work, they kind of need to know by May where we're going, if we're going somewhere. So, yeah, that was that. And then I came back in the evening and sought God here a little bit more. Another piece of news is that we realized about a week ago that our window for sending Ira and Joshua to Russia was closing. We forgot that, or we hadn't thought about the fact that when he turns 2 at the end of January, he has to have his own seat on a plane, which doubles the cost of the trip, basically. And we don't have the money to send just Ira even, so we've been praying for that and asked our life group here to pray about giving, and they gave about 70% of what we needed for that, so we went ahead and applied because we knew that if we waited till January, the cost would go way up. So we sent them everything on Monday. Tuesday evening, we got an email saying call us first thing in the morning, and basically Wednesday morning found out that they couldn't give the visa because they were saying there wasn't a blank page in the passport. We knew that that was a risk. There was a blank page, but it did have the smudges of a failed stamp attempt on it, and they are counting that as a stamp. So they sent us back everything, which we got Thursday, mailed it to the American Embassy for them to put pages in, which costs $81. Yuck. And we're waiting to see when we're going to get that back to find out if we'll have time to get the visa, because she is supposed to leave a week from tomorrow. She's supposed to leave Saturday the 8th. We already bought plane tickets and everything. And if that falls through, we're going to have to pay extra to move the plane tickets probably to early January so that she can be back before Joshua turns 2 and not miss Nadia's birthday as well. It's been a really frustrating thing. Some of you probably saw my post that I don't think old age or accident or disease are going to be the things that kill me in the end. It's going to be visa application processes. I seem to have this weird thing that I always try and do them thoroughly and they never go smoothly. The process we went through for India in the spring was ridiculous. So yeah, definitely pray for that. We really want Ira to see her mom and sister. They've never met Joshua. It's been 2 years since she's seen any of her family, so that would be a big deal. And then today, we got out the Christmas stuff. Yeah, without Thanksgiving to kind of mark, you know, the day after Thanksgiving is the beginning of the Christmas season. It's really kind of vague here when it begins. Some stores start putting out stuff as early as mid to late September. September, I kid you not. It gets more and more prevalent throughout October. And then a sort of official beginning here seems to be that each city has its own like light turn-on ceremony, a day when they have like a big festival and free concert in the city center, and then at a certain time they turn on all the Christmas lights for the town. That seems to be kind of an official beginning for most people, but that's still the second weekend in November. Still feels really early to us. In our schedule, we have our Refresh retreat, always that same weekend. So in some ways, when Refresh is done, like a huge chunk of our work for the year is finished. So that feels in some ways like we can start to look towards Christmas. But without Thanksgiving there to kind of mark it, it's kind of vague. So we've always just sort of treated it November 30th, December 1st, partially because we have this really nice Advent calendar that my sister gave me years ago, where each date is a different piece of the manger, and it's 24 days. And so Nadia loves opening a window each day. That kind of begins it. So we got all our Christmas music, put up our fake 3-foot Christmas tree that we put up every year. One day we'll get a real tree. We don't really have space here right now, so maybe when we move, get a real tree. And started all of that, and it got me thinking about Christmas and gifts, and you know, it seems like a lot of women really like going to the spa. They like having spa days. I don't know if that's as big a thing in the States as it is here, but spa days here, there's a lot of spas, and there's a lot of Groupons for spas. And got me thinking about why you would go to a spa, and it made me remember this essay that I have in this book that always makes me laugh. So I thought I'd read some of it to you. It's about a husband being taken by his wife for a couples package at a spa when they're on vacation in California. This is from the book Mind Over Matters by Mike Nelson, or Michael J. Nelson. Maybe one or two of you out there went, Mike Nelson, you mean the Mike Nelson? And yes, I do mean the Mike Nelson. If there is not a the Mike Nelson for you, do yourself a favor and do an internet search for Mike versus Joel. Mike versus Joel. Look at some video clips that might come up when you do that, and be introduced to a whole world of amazing and funny. A whole world. I can talk to you more about it if you're interested. But in the argument of Mike versus Joel, I'm a Mike guy. And this is his essay. I'm going to start it part of the way in. While on a low... While on a lovely drive through California's wine country, my wife suggested that we stop and enjoy a few hours at one of their world-famous spas, featuring their world-famouser mud baths. Of course, I pretended not to hear her, which was plausible enough given that our car was a convertible, but because the top was up at the time, she easily saw through the ruse and asked again. I contemplated pointing at something behind her and then leaping in the back seat to hide while she looked for it, but I was driving, so that was out. I tried simply confusing her by saying that we could go to the wine country spas anytime we wanted once we were back in Minnesota. We should just enjoy our time here. She countered by telling me in no uncertain, yet very loving terms that we would be stopping at a spa and that I would enjoy it and I would relax. Capiche was how she ended her loving request. And that is how I came to experience my first and very, very last spa treatment. For those of you who have never been to a spa, men, the first thing you'll notice is how powerfully it stinks. Anyway, it smells like lotions. Some people find that appealing, I suppose. You'll also notice that whoever is there to greet you appears for a time to be painfully shy. I thought there was something wrong with the woman who greeted us until my wife informed me that they speak very softly to ease you into a calmer state of mind. When I try to get information from a person whose voice is so low that it requires every bit of my concentration to make out her words, I personally am less relaxed at the end of such a transaction than I was before it began. We were offered several different packages, all of them anchored by their famous mud baths. I asked if perhaps they couldn't check on their to-go packages, but my wife signed me up for a relaxing couples package, including a relaxing massage, followed by a relaxing mud bath, and then the relaxing liberation of more than $100 from my credit card account. My wife and I parted for our massages, and I gave her a tender kiss, just in case I was relaxed to death and was never able to see her again. I was ushered softly into a room and told by my relaxation technician to undress as much as I felt comfortable. I thought momentarily about taking her literally and putting more clothes on, but I decided not to be difficult. I took her advice, disrobed, put on a towel, and proceeded to look over the many relaxing music choices available. I am told that if one gets there early enough, it's a very impressive sight to watch the huge trucks roll in and unload the great shipments of Enya music at the loading dock. My music choices were CDs with names like Pure Moods, Purer Moods, 100% Extra Virgin Moods, Turgid Soundscapes, Oxygen, Nitrogen, Carbon Monoxide, Soft Spring Rain, Thunderstorm, Straight Line Winds and Damaging Hail, One Slightly Wavering Keyboard Tone, and so forth. I picked at random, slipped out of my clothes, mummified myself in a towel, and lay down on the massage table. I must say, I was not impressed. Having to stick my face through that face hole was disconcerting. It made me feel as though I were stuck in a well. The massage person crept back in, nearly scaring the life out of me, and then proceeded to shake up a bottle of some sort of liquid out of my view. Of course, when you're lying on your stomach with your face through a small hole, everything but a small patch on the floor is out of your view. Finally, she got down to the business of touching me in an inappropriate manner. I know this is the part where one is supposed to let go, give in to the feeling, breathe deep, but all I could think was, yep, that is my back. You have found my back. You are touching my back. Indeed, that is still my back. That qualifies as my lower back that you are touching now. When do you think you'll be done with that? Where are you headed now? Careful. Okay, easy with that. You realize that that is my thigh. I'll need that back when you're done. How much time did we pay for? I tried listening to the music, but that too filled me with tension. What are those voices in the background singing? What are they saying? When are they going to switch chords? Many, many hours later, after the perimeter of my face had permanently bonded with the edges of the face hole, she crept out of the room. As soon as the door clicked shut, I leapt off the table and did some laps to work off the tension. Then I met my wife out in the hall and saw the look of transcendental bliss on her face. We were ushered into the mud bath rooms. Unfortunately, the mud baths are pretty much precisely what the name implies. It's not just some quaint colloquialism for steam bath or bubble bath. You actually get into a vast bathtub filled with gooey, grainy, somewhat smelly mud. Unfortunately, the similarities to a true bath don't end there. You are asked to get into the gargantuan tub of reeking goo with no clothes on your personage anywhere. Indeed, as I began to lower myself into the grime, I quickly realized just how dire the situation was, for the mud is very hot, much hotter than I am comfortable lowering my naked body into. My wife assured me that I would quickly get used to this. She'd never been to a mud bath before. How does she know this? I thought. Ah, oh, this is heaven, said my wife, as I sat thinking how much body runoff was in the mud with me. Just imagine, I thought, the hundreds of people who have parboiled their nakedness in this very mud in which I now stew. Just what percentage of this mud is actually dander, sloughed off skin, and sebaceous discharge? Do you think they change this stuff ever? Why should they? It's mud. If it gets dirty, you're great. I shivered, even though my body temperature was in the low 300s. I believe it was about then that my legs began to take on the delicious texture of perfectly prepared roast pork tenderloin. When it's done all the way through, but there's just the faintest trace of pink in the very center, the meat is juicy and not tough at all. Though we still had another 20 minutes on our mud bath time, I sucked my body out with great effort. While my wife drifted away on great fluffy clouds of relaxation, I began the arduous task of hosing off my mud-drenched body. It was no picnic. Little grainy bits of earth adhered with incredible surface tension to every part of my body. The soap they provide at those places is packed with botanicals, sure, but wholly without the desired detergent properties present in even the most inexpensive bar soap. While I was busy removing my top layer of skin, a gentle alarm sounded, and my wife floated out of her mud, drifted over to a shower, and reappeared a moment later looking lovely and relaxed in a fetching pink robe. I was mud-speckled, sore, and savagely tense, though I was as pink as her robe from all the scrubbing. When my wife had finished sighing deeply, I asked if we could perhaps shove off, wine country, rush hour, and all, I reminded her. We still have to get our foot massages, she said. My internal scream was very loud and lasted quite a long time. Great, I said, snapping one of the shower controls off the wall. This is a message to the poor woman assigned to massage the things at the end of my legs. We'll call them feet, just because that's what most people have there. I'm sorry. If there's anything I can do, money for therapy, pictures of nice feet sent to you daily for the rest of your life, I will. And please know, dear woman, that the foot massage you administered that day was at least in some measure as uncomfortable for me as it was for you. You see, my own feet have suffered greatly for many years of having to take the lion's share of contact with the earth as I move myself from here to there. It's not easy, and I haven't always been sensitive to their needs. Consequently, I've broken a few toes, sprained an ankle badly, and generally been thoughtless toward them. They have reacted by transforming themselves from the soft, pink, squirmy little tootsies of my babyhood into the horny, hairy monstrosities that now live at the same address. The look of horror on the woman's face when she got a good look at the business end of my legs filled me with pity. She dug gamely in, and with the liberal application of floral-scented oils, and I'm sure a measure of personal willpower I will never be able to fully comprehend, she made it through my foot massage. I tipped the woman up to the limit of my credit card, poured my wife into the convertible, and we sped away. Wasn't that divine? Asked my wife. I can honestly say it is the best spa experience I have ever had, I answered. Lesson learned. Don't get your husband, boyfriend, whatever, a spa package for Christmas. Speaking of Christmas, one of my absolute favorite things about this month is the music. I love Christmas music, and I have a tradition every year to download as much free Christmas music as possible and get another good album or two. And I wanted just to tell about this year's main pick, which is Silver and Gold, the Sufjan Stevens Christmas Collection, volumes 6 through 10. If you're not familiar with Sufjan Stevens, he is probably my number one favorite musician in the world. He is extremely eclectic, true original. First gained notoriety for claiming he was going to make an album for each of the 50 states. He released two, Michigan and then Illinois. And his album, Come On Feel the Illinois, sometimes just called Illinois, has been voted by some publications the best album of the last decade. And I'd be hard-pressed to think of a better one. It is a fantastic album. And then he... He released an orchestral project in honor of the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. That's quite odd. And then he did some very odd techno and electric music on an album called The Age of Odds. And he also has a tradition where every year he makes an album of Christmas music, covers and originals for friends and family. 2006, he released the first 5 years worth of those as a box set. And it is probably my number one favorite Christmas album of all time. I listen to it a ton, especially volumes 2 and 5. And then this year, he announced that he was doing another box set of the years 2006 to 2010, so volumes 6 through 10. And I got it last week, and it is really weird and really awesome and really worshipful. And yeah. How do I describe this to you guys? Well, you've been hearing selections from it throughout the show because he released all of his originals on this box set under public domain without copyright, so I can use them without permission. He does a very wide range of things on this box set. There are some a cappella renditions of old hymns and sacred harp choir pieces. There are some like high tech with lots of bleeps and bloops, techno versions of famous Christmas carols. There are some startling originals. The artwork on this box set is really, really bizarre. And a lot of it seems to be an exploration of all of the different things that Christmas has become in the West. And the very last song on the box set, which runs almost 3 hours worth of music, the very last song is a, I think, 12-minute long piece called Christmas Unicorn, which you heard at the beginning. And if you were to read through the lyrics, Christmas, you'd quickly realize that Christmas Unicorn is kind of an examination of all of the contradictions inherent in the way that we celebrate Christmas. It talks about its Christian roots, its pagan roots, its materialism roots, all of the different things that get thrown into this huge holiday and make it this really bizarre and contradictory experience. And the culmination of the song is with him repeating over and over again, "I'm a Christmas unicorn, you're a Christmas unicorn, it's all right, I love you." Which then somehow morphs into Love Will Tear Us Apart by Joy Division. It's a fascinating song. But he's also done a Christmas tour throughout the U.S. He was in Dallas and Austin last week. There's a lot I would have done to be there. Could I have? That was just sort of a celebration of all things Christmas. But from the clips I've seen on YouTube and people that I've talked to that have gone, said it was actually really worshipful. Sufjan is a believer. But he's also weird and a true original. And I say give it a listen. You will find some things that you hate and some things that you love. And you will be confused to find a cover of a Prince song on there. So, Silver and Gold, Sufjan Stevens. If you've never heard him before, start with volumes 1 through 5. Because they're pretty great. Cover of Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing and the song Sister Winter are two amazing places to start. If you really like him, though, get this. It's worth it. That's all the time we have for this week. I promise that next time, early in January, we will go back to having interviews. We're going to feature an interview with Stephen Donnelly, and we've already laid out kind of what we're going to be talking about. It's going to be a really interesting conversation, so I hope that you tune in for that. Sorry this has been late and all of the information is out of date, but I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you have a very Merry Christmas.